and welcome to the Race to Alaska podcast, where we are deep diving each week into the teams of the 2024 R28K. Broadcasting from the heart of Port Townsend, Washington, I'm your host and race boss, Jesse, flying solo today to bring you episode 8. Before we jump into today's interviews with Team Norepinephrine and Team Let's Wing It, I think we need to talk about the elephant in the room. Perhaps some of you out there don't know there's an elephant in the room. Trust me, there's a big damn stinky elephant in the room, and it's this. On Monday, we announced some big news that's shaken up Race to Alaska, and that is this. 2024 will be the last R2AK. Until 2026. Was that pause long enough to freak you out? Okay, yeah, it's true. We here at Race Command have made the bold, exciting, intelligent, and truly courageous decision to move R2AK to a biennial schedule. What this means for you, loyal listeners, is bigger races, more teams, and more time for each and every one of us to build up that wonderful anticipation. What's more is this. In the space created by R2AK's new yearly hibernation, a race long prophesied to return will be back. Washington 360 was introduced in 2021 to fill the empty space caused by the COVID cancellation of Race to Alaska, and frankly, it was awesome. Washington 360 unabashedly took some of the best parts of R2AK, the enginelessness, the supportlessness, and the mashing together of any type of watercraft one might dream of, and runs it through a course entirely within Washington State, where racers get to deal with a new set of challenges, windless stretches, vessel traffic, tide gates at Tacoma Narrows and Deception Pass. In 2021, racers self-sorted into three classes, go fast, go hard, and human-powered. In 2025, an additional class will be added, the youth class. Winners of each class will take home the world championship belt for their class and have their name forever inscribed thereupon. A few differences between this and Race to Alaska. In Race to Alaska, you may not have your engine aboard the boat whatsoever. In Washington 360, you can keep it aboard. We're just going to do something tricky to make sure you don't use it. And whereas Race to Alaska has about a 3-week window, Washington 360 is going to have a 12-day limit. It's exciting, folks. More can be found at www.nwmaritime.org/WA360-race. All right, let's get back to the whole point of this podcast, meeting this year's R2AK teams. The first team, you may remember, it's Lionel Jensen and his father Daniel, who've attempted R2AK twice before, now juiced up with two new team members in a brand new boat built by the same company that maybe built your high school tenor saxophone. It is Team Norepinephrine.
All right, hey, Lionel, thanks for chatting with us from your car in Vancouver. You're a busy man because you're a doctor now. And one of the best things I love, actually, so, okay, I do got to say that as a little bit of background, right, this will be your third go-around in Race to Alaska, right?
Yeah, I think that this will be the third time we show up to the start line. I think there was a couple COVID years we got prepared for, yeah, and there was a year that we were supposed to enter, and then I broke my elbow. That was last year. And so, yeah, this will be the third year we actually show up with a boat to Port Townsend.
And it just has to be said many times that you are the only Race to Alaska entrant that did it with not only a McGregor, which oftentimes is not considered a coastal racer by any means, but
that's
you,
fair, yeah.
You attached a stern wheeler to it. Right?
Yeah, that was Dad's masterpiece. He was the tool and die maker by trade, sort of like a machinist. And I can't imagine anybody else poured as many hours into their human drive system, because that thing was quite a masterpiece by the time he was done. It was a bit unwieldy to have 100 pounds of paddle wheel hanging off the back of a McGregor, which ultimately the dry weight is only like 1800 pounds before you add water ballast to it. But yeah, that paddle wheel was a crowd pleaser, and on calm water it worked really well.
And I love, because the McGregor really by design, you had like, I would argue like the toughest McGregor out there, but they're this hybrid. They're designed to take an outboard, stick it on the back of it, and when you're not sailing, you get that aft part up on a plane and do like 20 knots.
That's right. I joined the McGregor Facebook groups, and it's mostly the new McGregors that you can put a 50 horse on, which I won't disparage them because I really like those folks, but it's a weird thing to see something that looks like a sailboat planing, that's for sure.
And I thought it was like the perfect entrance. It was like this, it was a Frankenstein boat. Not only was it a McGregor, which was never designed for a race to Alaska, but engineered with a stern paddle wheel. I mean, it was kind of in a father-son duo. It was kind of a perfect combination. And the thing I really like is that, Race to Alaska has always had very few rules. It's essentially, one, it's get a boat and yank the engine out if it wasn't out already. Start in Port Townsend and travel unsupported till you get to Ketchikan.
Exactly.
And you like tested the limits of the lack of rules, I think, in the best way that first year. And I'm hoping you can describe what you ended up doing.
So, yeah, that first year, I think one of the highlights for me would be moving it from the one marina in Port Townsend to the other one down by where the starting line was, because all the people were down there for the start of the race. And I just was moving the boat from one place to the other. I didn't realize there'd be those crowds. It was a hot day, so I was tarps off. I was just pedaling along, minding my own business, shirtless. And I come into this marina to all these crowds with a paddle wheel hanging off the back of a sailboat with about 30 feet of bike chain connecting my seat in the cockpit through a couple of different points so that the wheel could raise and lower without effectively changing the distance between the pedals and where the wheel spun. And coming into that marina, and it reversed really nicely too. It just responded so well to that paddle wheel that I was able to back it right into my slip, no concerns, and just pretend it was no big deal to get in and out of there with a human powered boat. And the paddle wheel itself, so it was, what were the specs on it? I want to say it was about 4 feet in diameter, 4 feet across from port to starboard, 3 feet in diameter. Like I mentioned, 30 feet of bike chain running back to it, and a lifting yoke with a 5-to-1 pulley system on it so that when we were pedaling, you could raise and lower it 1/4 inch, and that would change how much resistance there was on the pedals, and then raise it right up out of the water for when we were sailing with it.
Amazing.
And the beauty of that paddle wheel was that there was so much momentum in that 100 pounds of paddle wheel that you'd get it spinning and it would be comfortable. It's not like with the propellers where when somebody gets to the bottom of the power stroke, it kind of looks like they're always in the wrong gear because you can't build momentum in a propeller system. So I think that was the limitation of propellers that Dad was trying to overcome when he initially came up with this insane idea to put a paddle wheel on a sailboat.
and then you took that boat, made it up that year up to Victoria, and then you took off and you pretty promptly pulled in, right? And disappeared for a few days.
Yeah, that's right. So I had just finished my PhD at the University of Alberta out in Edmonton. And I'll never know if this was the right decision, but I thought I owed it to... I thought I owed it to my mentors in the lab and the people that got me through that PhD to show up for my graduation ceremony. So we started the race. We approved it with the race boss that we could tie up just around in Oak Bay. So we only went a few miles. I got on a plane, flew to Edmonton. I think I spent 36 hours there and flew back. And I think that the downside of that was that it felt like we were playing catch up. We were in a race totally separate from anyone else, and it would have been nice to have been right in the mix that year with the other boats, but at least I got to go and walk across the stage and see all the people that got me through that degree. But definitely an unusual approach for sure.
Yeah, and I think kind of what came out of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you got to exercise your legs a whole bunch that year, and got fairly intimate with the concept of the Grim Sweeper, the boat that comes up on the tail end, that if they pass you, you're out.
Exactly. So I at one point, I think I should have looked it up before we got on this call, but at one point I had done the math on how much pedaling I'd done. And it was the majority of the way from, really it was the majority of the way from Schwartz Bay, just north of Victoria, to Nanaimo. We got a little bit of wind here and there, but I would sort of put in 8 to 10 hour days on the paddle wheel. And what would I do? I'd do about 2.7 knots. So if I was doing that for 10 hours a day, that gets you up around 75, 80 nautical miles, which I think is close to, in my head, what I think the number is. And so, yeah, there was a lot of pedaling. And then we got out past Nanaimo and, you know, it filled in. We had some nice sailing days. There was a day between Comox and Campbell River that involved a lot of pedaling. But once we were past Campbell River, we would just kind of, we had a little bit of wind, sometimes a lot of wind, and we would ride the tides. And we made pretty good time from there to Port McNeil, just at the north end of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where our race finished. So it was,
maybe
I'll tell that story now if that's all right.
So we
were out off, I want to say Alert Bay. I'm starting to get the names mixed up. That was a few years ago. And we'd sort of been getting beaten up. And the race is really more of a mental marathon than a sprint. And so I think that we were starting to get a little bit beat down as a two-person crew. And I would say that Dad is the sailor. I'm very much just the pedal meat. So I think that that adds to the challenge of the race for him, is that I'm sort of learning on the go. So mentally, it's a tough race between the conditions, being on the newer side to sailing. And we listened to one half of a mayday call from someone else in the race that evening, either right before or right after a squall kind of rolled in and beat us up a bit. And so we went into Port Hardy to lick our wounds. And I think the next morning we read about the team, that really experienced team in the Hawaiian outrigger canoe.
Oh yeah.
Halapuni.
Yeah.
They were way offshore in Dixon Entrance, and the wind and waves came in double what was forecasted. And so they had to get rescued. And so between those two things and us getting a little bit mentally beat down, and we're starting to have an issue with one of the flywheels on the paddle wheel. So a flywheel on a bike isn't meant to both be driven and drive a chain. And so that was something we fixed in future years, but we're starting to get a bunch of play in it. And we were worried that our paddle wheel wasn't that reliable. And so going north of the north end of Vancouver Island, when we were pretty mentally beat up and we were starting to worry about that flywheel, we just decided we'd sort of had our fill for that year. And, you know, that was probably the right decision to make. I definitely thought that would be my last race to Alaska. And then like 3 weeks later, we were talking about what we could do differently to try and make it to Ketchikan the next time. And here I am. What was that? What was that, 5-6 years ago, and we're still doing this? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's fast forward a little bit. So that was the race. And then you came in, 2022.
Yep.
What was your team name? Was it that R2 Ake?
That was so the first year was R2 Ake. This is probably the only part me and Dad ever argue about is the team name. So the first year it was R2 Ake, which was confusing because it sounds like the race, but it was kind of a play on words. So it was kind of good. And then I want to say the next year was good. It was Stern Wheeling.
Yeah, Stern Wheeling. Yeah.
Yeah, we straight up stole that from the people who write the posts for Race to Alaska, because in the first race, they called us the Stern Wheeling Fury of Team R2 Ake, and we loved that. So we took that, and we were team stern wheeling for the next race.
I'll definitely pass the compliments along to the monkeys for that one. all the riding good. Monkeys. So when you came in 2022, that means that you were there day one in 2022, which like many R2AK aficionados could argue was potentially the most vicious of the Race to Alaska starts. Definitely right in there with what 2017, I guess. But you know, that was the day where teams were getting pulled out of the water, veterans were capsizing, and boats were breaking up. So you come out of 2019, you're like, okay, I'm never going to do it again. 3 weeks later, start talking about it. You end up in a day like that. What was that? What were you thinking?
Yeah, that's so. What were we thinking? So we looked at the forecast like everyone else. And I think the race organizers had given us the extra 24 hours before we left that morning because there wasn't going to be a window. And so for the, you know, for the kayaks and for the small craft, that's kind of disappointing. You put in all this time to get ready, and it's not that you just have to be responsible and wait 24 hours for a window. There just wasn't going to be a window. But man, you know, you get caught up in the excitement of the start of the race, and how do you go back in? And so we went out and crossed the start line, and I think that we were probably saying the same thing as a lot of other boats, is let's just go out and see how bad it is. And man, I think Admiralty Inlet, you can correct me, what does it get, 5 knots of current through there? And you know, I think it was probably and it was blowing well over 20 knots, and so you get that vicious wind over tide. And that was actually sort of familiar to 2019. I remember it being really lumpy that year as well. And so we went out, and at that time, I think we saw one of the small boats had capsized, and it was a fellow racer that we really admire and respect. Is it Katie Stewart?
Katie Stewart.
So we were pretty disappointed to see that. And there was a boat from the race organizers there helping her out of the water. And we didn't know about the other boats that were in trouble. And we were holding our own in the wind. You know, that little McGregor, people give it a hard time, but that boat took every insane thing we threw at it. So we could handle the wind, but we started to, where the waves really got steep-faced, we sort of slammed off the top of a couple. And we thought the boat was going to break apart underneath us. And so Dad made the call to turn around, and we were a ways out. I want to say we were probably 12 or 15 miles out. You know, we'd crossed a good portion of it, but we were worried we'd break the boat. We had the extra 24 hours. So we turned around and ran back into Port Townsend. And the next day, I think there was a request that nobody try and cross the next day after the mishap of the first day. And so we wanted to make some progress out towards Dungeness Spit.
Right.
And that was, I don't know if that was the right call. That, you know, we were worried we'd eventually miss the tide window. So we went out, and I remember it took us 6 hours to go 1 mile because we went when the currents were against us, because we didn't want the wind overseas. But the flip side of that was, I swear to God, we went back and forth tacking and looking at the same rock
for, right, dealing with the flood the whole time.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes we'd be a little ahead of the rock, and sometimes we'd be a little behind the rock, and oh, that was miserable. And then we got behind on our way to Dungeness Spit, we got behind what's that? Is it Protection Island?
Yeah, Protection Island.
What a horrible name for an island. There's no protection. I swear.
It's surrounded by shoals that just stretch off for miles.
Oh, we got our asses kicked. We just got hammered. So the tide finally started going our way, and the wind just kept building and building. And you're on a lee shore, which isn't a whole lot of fun, and there's not a lot of great places to go and hide. And we were, I want to say we were 4 or 5 miles from where we were going to tuck in behind Dungeness Spit, and we lost steerage. We thought maybe the rudder broke. It hadn't. The rudder was fine, so maybe we were around a crab trap or something. But at 11 o'clock at night, in the dark, we just went from holding our own to having no steerage, and we were still 3 miles off shore. And I looked at the chart plotter and saw we were only in 30 feet of water. So I said, to hell with it. We'll put the anchor down here with 300 feet of road. It doesn't matter how windy or wavy it gets. We're not going anywhere. And so we spent the night, I mean, almost in open water, getting thrown around until the next morning when the sun rose and we were allowed to go across to Victoria. And then the wind died, and I pedaled the whole damn boat across all the Juan de Fuca, and you know, we made it to Victoria with time to spare, but oh man, was I played out by the time we got across.
Don't you love it? It's so often it's either too much or not enough. Whatever's being thrown is too much or not enough.
Yeah, there was about an hour where it was wonderful, just perfect. You know, the sun was rising, there was a little bit of wind, we're doing great, and then nothing, and then it's just a pedal fest.
All right, so then, all right, going forward again, new team, new name, norepinephrine, which is hilarious. Obviously, hats off to your profession as an anesthesiologist. But if I remember, norepinephrine, is it connected to fight or flight in your body?
Yeah, so that's your go-to fight or flight drug. That's the drug we grab when folks are really not doing well, and that's the one that keeps you alive, and that's I don't know. It shortens when we're in the OR. We call it norepi, and so it almost sounds like a wind, the norepi. And I'll admit I'm slightly stealing this name from an ICU doctor in Vancouver. But when I heard that name, I just thought, there's no way we're not using that. So that's
yeah, it's perfect.
That's the
it's
new
perfect
team name.
Yeah. And so you're totally retooling. You got a new boat. I would call it an upgrade to a, you got a Yamaha, which I agree. I saw your comments in the application. You're like, who would have guessed they didn't make just outboards and keyboards? I'm like, yep, I know. I had that same thing when I ran across Yamahas. But so you have a Yamaha, your dad's still going out, but you got two more crew, huh? What's
yeah,
the decision
exactly
on all that? Why are you beefing up the crew?
So I think that, so every year we go back to the drawing board and think about what would we need to do differently. And with a two-person crew and the dynamic of being a father-son team where, you know, I don't mind doing, I have a lot of hobbies that folks would call exciting. I don't know if I'd call them high-risk activities, but, well, you know, they're...
Hold on. Before you go, Lido, you're talking about, I'm guessing you do a lot of mountain climbing. Like your peak list is long enough to look like Santa's list of good and bad kiddos. And if you're through to that, I'm going to say, that's a high risk event. Laudable for sure, but definitely high risk.
Yeah. So like, what I normally do for fun is in the mountains, a lot of backcountry snowboarding where you're thinking about avalanche risk and you're getting into big terrain. And I just got back from a trip in Rogers Pass, which was
nice.
10 out of 10 sick. We got great snow. We got some big couloirs. I love doing that stuff. I'm not an ocean sailing person. That stuff is very new to me. So this whole race is still terrifying, but you know, figuring it out. But yeah, so the dynamic of the father son team is that dad really couldn't relax if I was ever sort of single-handing while he was trying to rest. So it just wasn't really feasible to go around the clock with that dynamic. We would have to put the anchor down so that we could both just lay down and sleep. And for making it all the way to Ketchikan, having a bigger crew really seemed like the answer for us. So then it becomes a puzzle of finding people that'll be a good fit to join me and dad, and finding a boat that's big enough, because putting four people on that McGregor, you know, for day sailing, it's fine, but it becomes an issue when you start to think about drinking water, food, how you're going to put that much weight on a boat that, you know, the hull is not very thick. Like that boat's built to be a trailer sailor. So So then I was talking to a friend about, kind of as a joke, I mentioned to him, hey, there's this boat for sale in Horseshoe Bay. You want to go 50-50 on it? And I was a little bit surprised when he gave me the thumbs up and we went and looked at it. And yeah, that's our Yamaha 30. It's a beautiful boat. Like if there's one thing I trust Japanese folks to do extremely well, it's anything to do with the ocean. And this boat, just so well made, so well taken care of. And, you know, it'll be very feasible for four people. And that way we can approach the race more as a marathon. And the goal would be to be able to sail for 72 to 96 hours without needing to put the anchor down for everyone to rest. And that makes the whole race so much more feasible. Like I don't understand how the folks in the race who single-handed do it. I have just unbelievable admiration for them. But, you know, for me and Dad, it just didn't work as a two-person team. So I think being a four-person team with a boat that can accommodate four people and have a few more creature comforts, because again, it's a mental marathon more than a sprint. Hopefully that's the combination that we can get to Ketchikan, and I can justify this tattoo on my arm, and I never have to do this again.
I know, because right. So the second time you raced, I think it was somewhere around Campbell River. You had to pack it in because you got COVID.
That was a bummer.
That must have been hard. I mean, it must have been mentally. Yeah. I think that was the last time you and I talked, actually. And I remember you sounded less fatigued and more just really sad but doing the right thing, knowing you were doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's really it. Like both times that we've left the race, it was nice that it was a unanimous decision between me and Dad. And both times we felt like we'd, you know, done the best we could given the circumstances. So, you know, that's just bad luck getting COVID. You know, I'm in healthcare, I've been immunized, so I'm sure it was less severe than it would have been without that. But nonetheless, going further north to communities that are more isolated, Dad just seems to be entirely immune. He didn't get it from me, despite being on the same boat with me for days. He didn't get it from Mom when she had it. So, but nonetheless, you know, there's that fear that Dad would pick up a severe infection from me. It just doesn't make sense to keep going north. And so that was almost an easier decision to pull out of the race then. But, you know, you're still disappointed that you put in months and months of preparation and then have to pull the chute on it. But that's like being in the mountains. Sometimes you don't get it the first try. And the longer it takes, the sweeter it is when you finally pull it off.
Well, I mean, I think you're deserving of a very sweet Ketchikan then. You know, this is going to be try three.
Yep.
Your new crew, you pulled in Randy Jensen, who looked to me, he looks to me like the one that, he's the young gun. He's the one you can fire.
No, no.
Have go for a long time.
Mixing up names.
James Green.
Yeah. So James Green is the young gun. He's a sailing instructor here in Vancouver. Definitely got an adventurous spirit. He's into ski touring. He's into all that mountain stuff as well. And I'm sure it's okay for me to say and provide a little bit of foreshadowing, but he's working on a rower cruiser in his garage and for the purpose of the race to Alaska. So it kind of worked out for him that he could join our team and get a taste of it on a bigger boat before he'd like to solo it one day. So he's going to get a good baptism by fire into the race before showing up with a boat 1/10 the displacement. But you know, we're really excited to have him with us for sure.
Yeah. And then you picked up Ted, right? You pulled him out of the Maritime Center.
Exactly.
And to make your fourth, he's more of the tall ship type.
Yeah. So it was really great. Really great with Ted. He's down in the States, so we weren't able to have a face to face, but it felt like a good fit because the first conversations we had were, you know, hours long discussing the boat, approach to risk tolerance and safety and how the team would make decisions. And those are the most important conversations to have to make sure somebody's a good fit. Cause this is somebody that in our case, you know, we're still thinking it'll take us the whole amount of time that we're given to get to Ketchikan. So you gotta be able to get along with folks. And from those conversations, it felt like a really good fit. And yeah, Ted's down in San Diego right now on a tall ship, but I think he comes back up to Port Townsend in March to work on Zodiac, which is a tall ship. And me and Dad are going to make a field trip down there for sure. The tool maker side of Dad is going to be beside itself with excitement, looking at all the custom pieces on a boat like that.
Mm. Yeah. Zodiac's great that way. She's a beautiful one. You know, she's the biggest of her kind around here. So it's nice to see in the States, at least, you know, it's nice to have her. I'm curious, I keep thinking what it's going to feel like when you get around Cape Caution, because that's kind of like the next, you know, that's the spot you were denied on that first time. I'm sure you could smell it from where you pulled in at Port McNeil. I feel like over the years, you're starting to develop kind of a laser focus. Like, it was fun the first time, 2019. 2022, you're a little more serious. Like, this is fun, but I want to get to Ketchikan. That didn't happen. And now it feels like I'm going to Ketchikan. Is that true?
Yeah, that's fair. It's every year that goes by, you spend time thinking about what are the things that you could do differently. And, you know, a part of that, choosing a different boat, is literally just having a boat that's in the water. Even though moorage costs a fortune, it means we can get more time on it. With the McGregor, it takes a day to get it in the water. And so you're not just going out sailing on it occasionally, which makes training tough. And so with the Yamaha, we've got, you know, we're getting our pedal drives built. Dad's making a lot of progress on that. I think that by the end of February, knock on wood, but we'll be starting to get a pretty good sense of what the new pedal drives look like. And James is local. He's been out on the boat with us. And Ted will be nearby in March. So we've blocked off some time to get all out on the boat together. And so this time around, it's a lot more training. But as far as thinking about Cape Caution and what lies beyond there, I try not to think about it too much. You know, I only think about how beaten up I've gotten going from Port Townsend to Victoria. And so I don't even think past that first leg. I just want to get through the proving grounds and then just figure the rest out from there.
I mean, to be honest, like physically, that leg can be the most brutal part of the entire race. I mean, you get up to Bella Bella North and mentally, definitely brutality starts setting in on your mind up there. But, you know, it gets a little more possible that you can wade out certain storms and you can make certain passages. So I think you've gotten the worst of it those 2 years, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be, I think as I'm, you know, spectating again this year, definitely going to be seeing you. You're going to be thinking, as you make decisions, fight or flight, what are they going to do? Fight or flight.
yeah, pure homemade norepinephrine getting squeezed out of those adrenals as soon as the race gets close, that's for sure.
That's awesome, Lionel. Hey, thanks for sharing your story with us on the podcast and everyone else out there. I appreciate you taking the time. I know as a new doctor, you must be very, very busy, but you fit this in, so appreciate it.
Yeah, and shout out to my program directors for letting me take a leave of absence in my first year of residency so that I could go and pursue this crazy race one more time.
All right, Lionel, I think that's it. I think we did it, and we're going to let Jesse do some kind of magic and see if he makes it sound smart or funny.
Well, thanks a lot, Daniel. That was a lot of fun, and thanks for this race you put together. It's you know, it's not just the race that's fun. I honestly wonder if I get more fun out of the preparation, because it means that me and Dad are getting together at least once a week to work on the boat. And that's a pretty neat thing. So I'm really glad you guys thought this up those years ago, even if I lose sleep thinking about it. It's a lot of fun.
You know, I'd say that for me, the one thing that I never expected to get out of it was, and I don't mean this lightly at all, but I have been totally gobsmacked and humbled by the people that I've gotten to meet because of this race. And some who I get to call friends, others acquaintances, but all of them who I get to share this story with, it's been, you know, truly a highlight of my life too.
That's cool. That's really cool.
All right, man. I wish well, Lionel. Maybe I'll see you when you're down here before the race start.
I'll be looking for you. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool, man.
Really fun to hear those stories from Lionel. And I want to double down about what he said about the maneuverability of that paddle wheel. I've seen it myself. It was super impressive. So someone out there, please build another one for us to watch. Up next, we've got Team Let's Wing It, whose laid-back team name doesn't really match up with his level of serious preparation and experience. Martin, you applied last year.
Yeah.
And I think that you've been aiming at the race a lot longer than just before last year. When did you first get hooked into the idea of doing Race to Alaska?
Yeah, so I think it was shortly after the Yukon River Quest in 2017 or maybe 2016. I, you know, had first time I heard about it. And then 2017 was a big year for me for the Yukon River Quest. And then sort of then the seed was there, and it was just, you know, the thought just grew and grew and grew and grew. And then I said that I got to do it one day.
Yeah, the Yukon River Quest has been quite a pipeline for Race to Alaska racers. But
yes,
I'm not sure that everyone out there in Race to Alaska land knows, since we have such diverse participants, some people know nothing about kayaking. Can you talk a bit about the River Quest?
Yeah, it's sort of the Yukon River Quest, obviously, is in the Yukon. From Whitehorse to Dawson, and it's sort of the longest race in North America. There are two races every year, is the Yukon River Quest, and then there's the Yukon 1000 as well. I think it's every 2 years, it's even longer. But it's sort of, a big sort of the big race in North America, or one of them anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's in the wilderness, and you pretty much go nonstop for 730 kilometers, I think it is, out of my head now, with some couple of mandatory breaks, 10 hours and 3 hours, something like that. So so you're basically close to 24 hours nonstop in the boat for the first day. And so that was sort of and I did quite well in there. It worked out very well. I was
What does quite well mean? Is that is that modest?
I won the race, so.
Oh, okay.
But said that, I was very lucky too. I had no idea. I think physically I was quite well prepared, but I got a bit lucky with the navigation. I was just hanging on to another boat, which was very experienced, and that helped me a lot. Good preparation in one hand, but on the other hand, I was lucky as well.
So how does a race like the Yukon River Quest, you're going, I mean, it's about the same distance as Race to Alaska, but I do have to it's a river. So
it's way less. It's way shorter. It's not 730 miles. It's kilometers, right?
Oh, it's so kilometers. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm an American over here. We don't think in those terms.
So it's very different. I mean, the Yukon is super fun. Same thing. Amazing people all around. But you don't have the mental stress. I think the Race to Alaska, it's just a completely different dimension in regards to decision making.
Yeah, I was going to ask. And so jumping off from something like the Yukon River Quest, to Race to Alaska, what are kind of the biggest leaps you feel like you're making?
Yeah, it's the decision making. I mean, you know, I'm an experienced sea kayaker. I've done lots of other sort of outdoorsy things, but it is a race, and you're pushing and making the decision when to go and not to go. I think that's sort of the big thing in the Race to Alaska. Where the Yukon River Quest is more like a bicycle race. You know, you go on it and you just go as fast and long as you can.
Yeah.
There's not other much to think about it. Where the Yukon River Cross, or where the Race to Alaska, it's every day you have to make decisions, right? And the preparation is much bigger in regards to gear and food, and obviously it's sort of, you know, a 2 week, 3 week event type thing, where the Yukon River Crest, it's only, you know, 2 days type thing.
Right. But you are pretty experienced in doing all sorts of different types of endurance challenges, right? You do cycling, you do your own kayak trips. So I'm curious, as a person, you know, this might shock the world as the race boss. I myself, I'm not a racer. I'm a race organizer. I am not a person you find in the middle of a long race trying to win something. What is it inside you that makes you want to do these races? Just, can you boil it down to something simple?
I like different things. I like to race. I love nature. I love to be out there. I love to be challenged. And the Race to Alaska has everything of those components. And I think it's just a perfect race. I can't think of anything better, really.
Oh, perfect race. We're going to get that written up on a quote somewhere and attribute it to you.
It is. When I heard about it, it's like, oh my God, it's right up my alley. It's everything I want and everything I love. So I'm tearing up, I think, right now.
Tearing up. Yeah. So let's talk about that. I think when folks who don't do endurance events like you, especially like sea kayaking, think about preparing for that trip, it's a bit mind-boggling, all of the preparation that goes into it. So for someone experienced like you, how do you approach getting ready? Do you start with the route? Do you start with getting your kit together? How does it start?
It's really everything. I mean, you know, in the winter, I was from the training, a bit of weight training, getting out when the weather is not too crazy. Luckily, here in North Vancouver, we have pretty good weather and a great community. And so we're getting out on a regular base. So the training is really good. And then, it's just sort of as well, talking to other ex-racers. You know, the community is absolutely incredible. I reached out to two different teams, kayaking teams, and they were all super helpful. So you get a couple of few hints and tips, and that helps tremendously. And then you just sort of gear-wise, it's not too difficult. I mean, obviously, you don't want to bring too much, you don't want to bring too little. So that's all sort of still trying to figure that out a little bit, but it's not a deal breaker. I think, you know, if you bring a little bit too much, you know, it's not the end of the world. If you bring too little, then you know, you trying to do the right thing there. And and then you just look back what you need on your trips. And at the end of the day, it is just another sea kayak trip. Just you're pushing a bit harder. so it's pretty funny sometimes, you know, saying, I think, you know, I have this under control, and then sometimes I get this little anxiety attacks, which is pretty funny. So
sea kayak, the incredible thing about sea kayak expeditioning is you're such a contained world, even down to the fact that you're inside of your cockpit, inside of your skirt. You are become the boat. It's a really incredible way to travel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're so close to the water. You can go in any creek, you know, in any sort of little bay and beaches where big boats can't go in there. So you're so connected to the water, which is totally appealing. And the same what I did in whitewater kayaking as well in the past, in the 90s, was sort of my life. And it's the same thing. You come to places where nobody else can go except in a kayak. So that's super, super special. You come to an amazing campgrounds, obviously. And having the connection to the wildlife in a kayak is just, you know, it's just another proportion. I think when you are, you know, popping up, or when the whale's popping up beside you, it's just quite different than comparing when you're in a cruise boat. So
the closest I've ever gotten to a black bear, I was in a kayak in a salmon spawning creek up in Alaska. When a bear has unlimited salmon to eat, it does not care how close you get, it turns out. This is not advice to the public to go close to bears, but it is something cool you can do in a kayak.
We have bears in our backyard, so it's I've seen it quite frequently.
You mentioned the Race to Alaska community and how there's a big pool of knowledge there. Anything specific that you learned from previous racers, and maybe you can spill the beans if you want to tell us who they are.
Yeah, it started with Team Oracle, you know, Janice and Ian, amazing people. And as well, you know, thank you for putting up the big prize, by the way, the extra $1,000. That's very generous.
It's 1,000 Canadian. I just want that clear. It's like kilometers. Oh, yeah. It's not nearly as much as some people think.
Yeah. It helps. And yeah, I was reaching out to Zendog and Sea Smoke. Obviously, Rob, he's a friend of mine.
Sure.
And there was I got a good little write up from him as well. And yeah, so yes and no in regards to tips. It's since I've done quite a bit of sea kayaking, I know sort of. What's going on, but on the other hand, you know, I'm still debating the route, and I'm, you know, Granville Channel and this, and I'm trying to go on the outside if the weather allows, because people have obviously very different experiences in Granville Channel. I mean, same as Cape Caution, but you can't avoid Cape Caution, but you maybe can avoid Granville Channel.
Yeah.
So big breakthrough. No, not yet. I mean, it's good to talk to them, but out of my hand, there's nothing I can really think. Oh yeah, I should have thought about this or that. It's all in my head, sort of. Mm-hmm. But trying to figure out a good compromise of what to bring and not to bring, and that sort of stuff. So, but it was good to talk to Rob for sure, because he lives close to Simoneros, you know. So I'm not too worried about Simoneros, because in a kayak, if you go and stay in the main channel, I mean, he blasts through Simoneros in pretty high speed when it was going. Pretty high. And so I'm not too worried about that. For me personally, it's, I think the challenge and when the anxiety kicks in is when to go and not to go, you know, what the forecast is saying, that sort of stress, I think. And and the rest is sort of, you need a lot of luck. I mean, you know, you better take care of your hands, and blisters might be a big issue, or tendonitis, or anything can happen.
Yeah, I was wondering maybe if Zendog Bob was able to give you any tips about the blisters, because he's learned a thing or two.
Yes, correct.
No, recall, I mean, there's some good photos of his hands out there.
Yeah. As you know, I'm paddling a Rockpool Terran, and there's a fantastic paddle forum for that Rockpool Terran. And actually, I got there like some good tips for the hands, and it's called. I'm taping my hands most of the time, probably with wet tape. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a sort of tape. What? So gloves, when you use, a lot of people use gloves, but I find gloves very sort of soggy, makes your skin very soggy. Mm-hmm. And where this wet tape, it's very good. It's waterproof. And you just tape it on the morning. It lasts for quite some time, and maybe have to repeat it once during the day. But that works really well for me. So maybe a combination of nothing and gloves and bed tape. So I hope I'll keep my hands under control with that sort of, with those tips. Yeah.
That sounds good. You also mentioned Ian and Janice, Team Oracle.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about blisters. And Oris, if listeners don't know what we were talking about, that is the Oracle Blister Prize is a side bet that Ian and Janice put up. It's $1,000 Canadian, so you can buy a couple hot dogs with it. And that's presented to the first human powered team to arrive in Ketchikan. Do you are you gunning for that award?
It would definitely be sweet. Be honest about that. I mean, so just to be clear, so human powered means no sail at all. Is that correct?
That means no sailing. Yeah.
Okay. So rowboats and kayakers, basically, most likely,
rowboats,
and SUP.
I mean, yeah, maybe a sup could do it if we get some kind of monster out there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Carl Kruger, he was, you know, it was pretty impressive, obviously. So he knew the path very well there. And but yeah, the weather is the big thing. Obviously.
So far, the one to beat, though, last year was the first year of this award, and that was Ken Deem.
Yes. And
he smoked everybody, for sure.
And Rob wasn't far behind. I mean, you know, he got a bit unlucky on a couple of spots. But other than that, he was, you know, he was blasting up there as well.
It's a funny thing on this course, trying to compare from year to year. You know, last year there was that giant northerly blew in, and everyone was hunkered down for 2.5 days. So how do you compare from year to year?
You can't. Yeah, exactly.
So, that, you know, that said, knowing you can't account for anything, do you have Any sort of time frame goal that you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, anything sort of, 16 days would be super, super good. Mm-hmm. I'll be very, very happy with that. And but I do have to catch the ferry, so I have to go back to work. So I think that's 20 days or 21 days, okay. Roughly. So yeah, otherwise, I'm not sure if I still have a job.
a few people have lost their jobs because of the race.
But,
you can be the
I
next.
Have a good excuse. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then it's the fun part is we'll see how it works out. I'm going with Bruce, right, from Bow and Arrow. Mm-hmm. Right, he's a buddy, and actually tomorrow we're doing our first little test paddle together over the weekend.
Oh, great!
And we'll see how that goes as well. So we have no idea. We probably start together, and then we'll find out if we stay together or go separate ways. Or
that's an interesting thing. So last year we had Stuart and Scott were kayakers that joined up, and they had to make the decision right outside of Thomas Basin who was going to actually arrive first at the dock. Yeah. So you might be presented with a situation where you have to like flip a coin. Do you think that would be a tough decision?
Are you competitive
in that way?
Oh,
you'd
God,
make
no.
a sprint
if,
for
if,
it?
If definitely not. No, definitely not. At that point it's a team effort for sure. So,
all right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I guess
it's up to me who I place first in the leaderboard.
We might just hold hands.
Okay.
To the finish. Yeah.
We'll find a way to give you the same ranking.
But to be honest, I think it will be challenging to stay together. There's so many variables, right? Just our boats are different. I think then you have good days, you had bad days, and somebody might take more risks than the other person. I think it's very hard to stay together, and it's just a completely different experience. Like, mm-hmm. of course, it makes things easier, just especially on the landing or when you leave. It's so much easier on the boats and mm-hmm. just carrying the weight. But on the other hand, I think you slow each other down on the water. I think you slow each other down pretty much because everybody has different needs for food and bathroom time and changing clothes and all of that sort of stuff. So it's another thing to deal with. So pros and cons.
In general, do you prefer solo paddling or being with a buddy?
I really like both. You know, I have days I'm doing most of the training on my own. But at the same time, I'm super happy to be in the party. So it's mm-hmm. it's. But again, I think if I feel great, maybe it's just even better to do it solo because it's just such a much more like a raw and pure experience.
It's cleansing.
Absolutely. But then on the other end, I think it's. I'm a person. I think it's. Bruce is a good guy. He's very safe. Same time, maybe you just need the extra sort of support to feel better. I'm not sure. We will find out.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to watch a tracker, see what you wind up doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm in this lucky position. I get to be on the receiving end of all of the emails that I get from racers and fans and prospective racers and all of these people. So I get to hear all of it, and I feel really lucky to be that person. And I hear from a lot of people who have these dreams of doing Race to Alaska, but they know that they're not yet ready for it. Do you have any advice? Say there's a person who just got into kayaking. What would be your main line of advice for someone who wants to finally reach something like Race to Alaska?
Well, it's definitely not for a beginner. I mean, you have to be a solid paddler, I think. But I think in regards to fitness, you just got to put the training in and use common sense. It's just about common sense. And then you heard it many times before, you just got to break things down and then it's, I think, very achievable, but you do need a lot of luck, for that race for sure. I mean, anything can go down in the body. If you push hard, if you're paddling like 80 kilometers a day, anything can happen. And we need a lot of luck too for the first stage to Victoria. So it's So, and that's another thing we have to think about. And I talked to Bruce already about it. You know, what happens if we can't make the crossing? So, well, you know, we just do another amazing sea kayak trip. We are ready to go. So we just try to blend that out and put the negativity away and mm-hmm. be positive and do an amazing, beautiful trip out of it. But sorry, back to your question. Yeah, it's this is not a trip for a beginner or who just started paddling. I think you need a bit of time, sea kayak time under your belt, for sure. But then it's just sort of, yeah, pick away on things and pick away, try to get experience where you think you're lacking. If it's the technical ability, if it's the fitness, you know, you want to have a good solid role for sure, eskimo role. That's super important, I think, because this water was, you know, can change pretty quickly, and when things get big, the best thing is to have a really solid role. So that's, and you know, when you see kayakers in Britain, they're just so much better than the majority here of the West Coast. So I don't know why that is really, but I see really a lot of people here who, yeah, it's just different in Britain. And that's all I can say.
So then what's on your bucket list? What's you imagine you've completed Race to Alaska.
What's next?
What's next? What's the big thing?
I'm really, I have another sort of a partner for a while now, and I'm really looking forward to do beautiful trips with her and just discover the coast. So I would love to spend time, you know, Campania Island. That's sort of a little dream of mine to spend some time there. So I'm trying to go if the weather allows, I try to go the outside. So skip Granville Channel and Princess Royal Channel, right? I think it's called, and go on the outside. So when you leave Bella Bella, I'm trying to go on the outside.
Yeah.
And there's some amazing, just phenomenal, beautiful places there. So that's where I try to poke my nose in. And if it works out, it's great. And if not, I want to do this in a different year. So and then Haida Gwaii is, that's on my bucket list one day. And just do more exploring, like racing. You know, I'm 59 now. Big things are, you know, got to be realistic too. What's still possible. And there's so many beautiful places to explore. But Race to Alaska it's definitely a big dream of mine for the last few years. And finish that one and then continue. We'll see what's next.
Martin, I'm really glad. I know you couldn't make it out last year. You were all ready to go last year, and it wasn't able to happen. I'm really glad that you came back and stuck with it.
Yeah. So two years in a row, a lot of preparation. So we better.
Well, you are ready.
hopefully it will work out. Yes, great. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, hey, not much time left. I mean, just a couple months off now. And so looking forward to meeting you in person and
Jesse. Yeah.
Meeting you on the docks.
Yeah. Thank you all. I mean, you're an amazing team. And again, the whole paddling community is phenomenal. I love it. And we have such a great community here in Vancouver. It keeps me going. And a quick thank you to Deep Cove Kayak and Coast Outdoors for all putting the races on and have the amazing paddling community here.
All right. We'll see you in a few months.
Okay. Thank you, Jesse.
All right. There it is. And as we wrap up today's episode, I want to fill you in on an upgrade to our race tracker system for 2024. This year, we're going to be using the Yellow Brick Tracker system to keep up with all the racers live on the course. Yellow Brick Tracker is wonderful, and it's really used best through their app. So I suggest you go ahead and download that tracker right now wherever it is you get your apps. You will be able to use it on our website, but there's a little more functionality if you just go ahead and download the app. So do that now so you're not caught unawares when the race starts. And that's it for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in. And make sure to keep an eye on your inboxes for all the latest news and updates from the race. We'll see you next time.
Race to Alaska is a project of the Northwest Maritime Center in Port Townsend, Washington. To learn about our other projects or how you can support them, please visit us online at nwmaritime.org.